This spring, Beverly Davenport became the 8th chancellor of the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. She comes to the university at a time of political polarization and diverging views about freedom of speech, academic freedom, sexual assault, infrastructure, and other campus concerns. In her first interview for WUOT, I spoke to Davenport about the road ahead and her plans for the university. All right, Dr. Davenport, you've been at UT for just a little while so far. What stands out to you about the university?
People ask me that question a lot. Sometimes I get the question of what surprises me the most, or some people ask me what brings me the most joy, and I always say it's the students. I'm so impressed with our students. And of course, before I got here, I looked at all of our stats, and they're really just quite remarkably prepared when they come to us, and our graduation and retention rate trajectory would indicate that they are. But yes, they're smart and they're prepared, and they have these incredible test scores before they get to us. But I tell people, they're just so nice. And last night I told the story about losing my car on campus, and we laughed about that. And three different people I stopped, and they said, "We'll just stay with you until you find it." And I think there's something really special about the students here, and this volunteer difference is not just a slogan. It's not just a motto. I do think it is something about this place and this region and how these students are living their life, and I'm really proud to be a part of that.
What are some of the challenges facing UT Knoxville at this moment?
I think the challenges that face us are the challenges that face higher education in general. You know, we all compete for the best talent, and the best talent comes in many forms. Of course, we think about students, and we do compete for the best students. We compete for the stellar faculty, and we compete for the best staff to work for us. And that means we're competing for the revenue to support that competition. It's a big enterprise that we run here. It's on the Knoxville campus, it's a $1 billion enterprise that I have the honor of helping to lead. And so that's a big challenge. How are we going to fund higher education? With that, all of the social political pressures that go along with that, what is our role and what is our responsibility? Of course, I've dedicated my entire adult life to this important enterprise, and we look at the economic competition in the world, the global competition, and where the next job is going to come from, and who's going to innovate. And we love this word, ideate. And can we cultivate the kind of entrepreneurial environment so our students think in terms of their place in not just in this state, but in this nation and in this world? We live in a globally connected world. I have a friend, we often laugh and say our students go to another country the way we go around the corner to a drugstore. And so are we teaching them to compete in a global environment, to understand difference and appreciate and navigate the world of which they are a part, and to take on the challenges of the world? And what is the University of Tennessee's difference? What is it that we can bring to some of these big challenges of the world? And those are questions we ask. Are we situated and prepared to create the laboratories, the studios, the experiences, the leadership opportunities for our students to leave us ready to take on this kind of work and to create this kind of work? It's a different work world than where we are and where we were when we left college. So it's an exciting place to work. I feel absolutely privileged to get to be in this seat and do this work. But we all face many, many challenges, and they're not unlike the challenges that this country's facing right now.
Can you tell us about some of the new initiatives for the university as it seeks to distinguish itself among other schools across the country?
Well, it's in part related to what I just talked about. All of us, I think, are interested in issues of innovation and entrepreneurship. In some studies, incoming students as high as 60% say they want to start their own businesses. I think they're looking for a different kind of work world. You know, two, three, four decades ago, we were just hopeful to find a job, and these students want to create their work world, and they have ideas, and they have no fear, and they will take risk, and they are creating apps and creating businesses, and they are adventurous, and they want to control their work lives. Many will say, I don't want to work like you. I don't want to work all the time. And I admire that sense of perspective about what work is. And they know that work has changed. They're technologically savvy. On average, students bring 6 devices with them to college. That's a lot of technology that they live in. So we have to be a technologically prepared environment, and we have to nurture that entrepreneurial spirit. I'd love to have some entrepreneurs in residence with us. Certainly, I'd love to have some of the revenue from those UT alumni who've been successful come back and teach our students, invest in us with an innovation fund so we can seed some of those innovations. I was downtown in Knoxville talking with the graduates of Leadership Knoxville about the importance of engaging with this city. Every great city has a great university, and every great university is situated in a city that partners with them. We are in this together. And I've talked so much about what a gem it is to have a national laboratory, Oak Ridge, right here with us. And it's so important that we think about we are a region. We're not just a university. We're not just a city. We are a region with so much social and intellectual and innovative capital. And that attracted me here to see that potential.
One of your areas of interest is in technology and how it can be used to facilitate learning, especially across long distances.
Yes.
How will you bring that knowledge to bear in your current role? Do you see UT expanding into more tech-infused learning, or is the university already doing a good job of that?
We certainly are involved in technology-infused learning environments. I think we need to grow that. It's hard to keep up. It's hard to keep up with these young people. They were born into a digital world. They are digital natives. We aren't. I'm not. But we have to keep up with that. People say the sage on the stage is gone. They are bored. We think we can hold their attention for about 15 minutes, maybe. We cannot stand and just talk at students. Big lecture halls don't work so well anymore. But there is, the Tennessee 55 push, that there are so many learners that we could also capture from e-learning, online learning. 1 in 5 students take a course online, residential students. So I've always said we need to meet learners in the ways in which they lead their lives. So whether it is an adult learner who is not on our campus, whether it is a learner who's right here with us and sitting in their residence hall and it's 2 a.m. and they want to turn on and tune in, we need to be prepared to make it available. Some people talk about this as a bundled generation. I don't know about you. I have iTunes. You know, I'll buy a 99-cent one song. I still call them albums. I might not want the whole album. And that students are like that too. They bundle their knowledge in the same way. We have to think about it in those same ways. So absolutely, I want to invest in e-learning. I would want to certainly invest in technology-infused learning environments. I call them learning environments, not classrooms anymore. They're out there in the cloud. They're not right here in a physical space.
Not just limited to the classroom anymore either as well.
Right. And they're out there in those hammocks tuned in with their earbuds on looking. Well, I'd like to think they're looking at their philosophy notes or physics notes or something, listening to their lectures.
And you can still call them albums, by the way. Vinyl is very popular with young people again.
So. It's retro.
Yeah.
I know.
What's old
my
is
kids
new.
Looked at all of mine. They were kind of excited, although disappointed that I didn't have more.
Yeah. I'm interested in your case studies on work-life balance. You're in a in what could be a very hectic job. So how do you manage that?
Why don't you just ask a really hard question? This is not a good week to ask me how I'm managing my work-life balance. We manage that as well as we can. You know, we look for outlets. I'm running pretty fast and pretty hard these days. You know, I'm on the upstart. I'm still in startup mode. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to absorb everything that I can. And, of course, this is graduation week. So we're morning, noon, and night. That's the big upside of working on a college campus. There are so many things. Every day, 24/7, I could be engaged in. The downside is there's something going on 24/7 that I could be engaged in. So I got a new trainer. I'm so proud of myself. Now you check in with me and see how long I can keep that up. I try really hard. And I'm trying harder. I talked yesterday with a group of employees on the employee council about we need to promote wellness at work. We spend more time with the people we work with than people in our lives. And so I try to be mindful of that. I've heard there's some great antique places around here. Sometimes I just like to go wander around and just look at pretty things and old things. And I have, against my better judgment, bought a house that's almost 100 years old. So that kind of forces me to turn my attention away from that's another kind of work. So I think we need multiple kinds of work to keep us stimulated and away from the work that could consume us.
The university is operating in a unique political climate right now. State lawmakers in particular are more than willing to use purse strings to sanction the university for activities such as Sex Week or programs like the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, which was recently defunded. How do you plan to address political concerns and keep the university's academic and social culture healthy?
Well, I think this state is certainly experiencing what the nation as a whole experiences. You know, we are in a social and political climate where people are very divided about their views. I'm so proud of the discussions that I've had with our students and with our faculty, and I've had very good discussions with our legislators this year. I've only been here for a few months. I came in February, and I'm very pleased with the work that our legislature has done on free speech that just came out of both bodies have approved a free speech amendment, and I think that is a great example of what campuses certainly were always historically places for voices to be heard and for debate to ensue on all aspects. And really, that's what liberal education was about, you know, to broaden and give depth to all points of view. And so I'm so pleased about that. I've been in deep discussions with our students about Sex Week. And, you know, we have two Fulbright scholars who organized Sex Week this year. And, you know, their discussions, we had really, really moving discussions about their overarching goal was to promote an understanding and to prevent sexual assault. I couldn't be more proud of efforts to promote and prevent sexual assault. It's a national crisis. There's not a president, a chancellor among us who is not devoted to and concerned about sexual assault. So I applaud our students for rethinking and reimagining ways in which they can educate for that very issue. And so we've spent a good deal of time on those issues. I think this is what our work is. It's to educate. How do we educate not only legislators, but the public and each other about these very, very tough and difficult places? College is a time to find one's voice, to learn how to debate, to learn how to bring evidence. I was a debater. I'm a communication professor. You know, logic and debate and evidence and learning how to use your voice and being a consumer of information. What is accurate? What's not accurate? How to arm myself against information that's inaccurate? That's really what college is all about. So I'm really pleased that our students are learning that activity. And I think we've made really great strides. And I'm really pleased that our legislature has made great strides in the same way this year.
At the University of Cincinnati, you launched several hiring programs that ultimately increased the number of women and minorities among faculty.
Yes.
A lot of organizations talk about wanting to increase diversity. How did you actually accomplish it, though?
Well, programs that I have been supportive of and created throughout my career are, in part, these that I think you are referring to. I partnered with units throughout the university, and we helped not only provide search support, but to provide some funding for units that were not very diverse. And we talk about diversity in the broadest sense. Women are underrepresented in historically in many of the STEM disciplines. We talk about diversity in terms of faculty, and certainly from students as well. We were looking for faculty who might have their degrees, their terminal degrees, PhDs, from a variety of universities, not having everybody being educated from the same place. So we were looking very, very broadly. Nursing doesn't have a lot of male faculty. So there are many, many ways in which we looked at diversity. But, you know, simply put, we helped in the search process. We looked at the pipeline, how many people had degrees in these areas, and then we went out to areas. There are national meetings where people come together, and then we provide funding incentives for that kind of activity.
What do you miss most about teaching?
Oh, gosh, the students. They lift you up every day, their energy, their excitement. I tell people all the time, administration is not the kind of work that people will tell you, you changed my life. Students will tell you that. And where do you get that? It's the ultimate reward, you know, to be a co-learner as well. They teach me. So I try to get that as I can. You know, when I walk into a meeting and I see what they're working on, when I listen to how they argue, you know, when I ask the students, what is the purpose of Sex Week? I get some insight into how they're thinking. But I miss learning from them. I miss hearing how they talk. I miss the rewards of thinking I've made some differences in their lives, and just the energy. I tell people teaching is a calling. There's something about it that you're just drawn to it, and it's the reward. It's the reward.
Last question. Are there any pet projects or major initiatives that you're eager to get going?
I can't wait to tell our story. I think there are so many gems. I think people don't know how good the University of Tennessee is. I told this to the Leadership Knoxville audience 2 days ago. The University of Tennessee has a $1.6 billion economic impact on this area. That's amazing. 32,000 jobs have been created because of that economic impact. We have 21 programs that are in the top 25 in the nation. We are a national competitor in so many ways, and that's right at the top. I really want to infuse and invest more in marketing and telling the country and the world. We at the University of Tennessee are here, and they're going to hear more about us.
Dr. Beverly Davenport, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.